Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into this staple show, Shout, a Buffalo Football Podcast. We are live with the man of the hour, the man of the week, John Scott, formerly of Spectrum News, now the fresh, brand new sports director, Channel 2 WGRZ in Buffalo, joined as always by Ryan Talbot, my tag team partner. John, it is a big week. How are you? Congratulations.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. This has been something I know you and I, Matt, have been discussing for quite some time now as a where are things in the process, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate when you're going through job stuff. It goes a lot slower than probably anyone would really like, and that certainly was the case here. But the end goal was met, thankfully, and I could not be more excited to hop on and lead the sports department at Channel 2 WGRZ here in Buffalo.
I remember when and it was only a few days ago, so this isn't impressive, but when you tweeted that you were leaving Spectrum, I can't imagine how many texts that you got from people, because I think I got about 10 or 15. What's going on with John? What's going on with John? Ryan was actually one of them. And Ryan, what was your first reaction? Because I think a lot of people were panicking that John was leaving the beat.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. I mean, I know he has those Ohio roots, so I was a little worried he was heading back that way. So I'm glad to hear, though, that it's WGRZ and you're staying on the beat.
Yeah, it was. So it's funny. Friday, I thought, was overwhelming with a lot of responses and all of that. And then yesterday was a whole other beast in and of itself. And I announced my departure from Spectrum actually immediately in the car after we played basketball last Friday, boarded bat. And so I had the entire day to get responses and kind of parse through all of that. But yesterday it came together and everything came out like in the evening, and I'm trying to still get some stuff done logistically. And I had dinner with Jonathan Acosta and Lindsay Mopper, the two people I'm joining with at Channel 2 in the sports department. So we were just out and about. My phone is just nonstop. And it just like, I poured a glass of bourbon when I got home at like 10 o'clock. And I'm like, I'm just going to finally go through all of this stuff. But great, I guess, quote unquote, problem to have. And again, I could not be more excited. And I've said this to other people. It's not just certainly to join this new team and get this new opportunity at Channel 2, but it's to still be a part of this group as well and be on the Bills beat. And I will not be there every single day like I've been for the past 7 years, but I'll still be there a good amount of time. I will still be fully into the Bills and be able to have these conversations, but also be on the road trips, be in the room, and have a lot of the camaraderie that I know we all get. And from talking to others in other markets, it's truly unique here in Buffalo. We're not all best friends, but a lot of us have a relationship that goes beyond just colleagues in a media room covering a professional football team.
There's so much to get to Bills wise, and we are going to dive into it. What I did was I put out a call to our Shout Insider text group, asked for what they want us to talk about. And this is going to be their show here in a few minutes. A lot of people excited about John's perspective added to, you know, this night, the night before we talked to Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, the first time we hear from Josh Allen since the Stephon Diggs trade tomorrow at One Bills Drive. So still a lot left this week to get into. But I wanted to say before we go too far, something about you. I've long told people, and I'm not just telling you this because you're on the show and you're a friend of mine, But I think that you've been one of the best kept secrets in Buffalo sports media. And I think a lot of people that really pay attention to the scene appreciate and respect your work. Obviously, this job is, you know, a reward for years and years of just absolutely busting your tail, in the words of Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, you know, really just doing great work. And a lot of it was thankless. A lot of it was, you know, I remember having those conversations when I first got to the beat, and I was trying to set myself up here, and we'd have a lot of conversations just about craft and about approach and about brand and everything like that. And the way that, you know, you've kind of pushed through it all, and now to get rewarded on the other end of it, I'm super happy for you, man.
I appreciate that. And it's mutual. The feeling is mutual. I will say this, I'm looking forward, but just because I left a place, and you're not saying this, but just because I left a place doesn't mean it still wasn't a great opportunity.
Right.
And I was supported greatly by a lot of people at my previous job, and that allowed me to do what I was able to do. Literally was given a blank slate. I mean, TV people in 2017 locally were not doing beats. They were not single, you know, I was probably the first to say, all you are doing as a television reporter in Buffalo or Rochester is you will be at the Buffalo Bills every single day. And that was, I think, something that allowed me to use my creativity and develop a vision for how I feel things should be covered. And I'm going to continue a lot of that stuff over at Channel 2 and have more people to divvy out, you know, the things with, and maybe even continue to grow there. So I appreciate it. And to me, I would just say this, I was doing some reflection. A lot of people, whether it's jobs or things they're pursuing, it's not easy. And a lot of times you can get stuck in something where you feel like you've reached the end of the line, or how can things improve? I lost my very first television job because my station got bought by our competitor. I didn't have a job for a year. I lived in my parents' basement waiting tables. I then took a news photographer job where my shift was 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. and I sat in a car by myself and listened to Police Scanners. And I did that for 18 months. So I fought my way back to being an on-air sports person, and it was an untraditional path, but it was absolutely the one I was meant to take. And it helped build a lot of the character that when people aren't recognizing my work, maybe like they are some other people, it is what it is. Just keep grinding along. And ultimately it's definitely paid off, and that mentality will not go away. And I look to bestow that onto other people I work with.
Jake Hansen on YouTube asking if John Scott fought crime. I don't know if that's the case, but you definitely kind of have a superhero look to you. So, or at least in the gym sometimes when we're playing basketball, when the three is kind of falling.
I mean, Ryan and I are actually the true tag team here. We are the Bald Brothers. And I will also shout out, I know we're going to get to them, but the guy who asked the question, whose name was Ultimate Warrior, I told Matt that I think that was amazing. I almost actually wore my Ultimate Warrior homage t-shirt on the show.
That would have been awesome. Nice.
To give a shout out to the question guy. But yes, you know, you have too good of hair to be a wrestler. Ryan and I could really mix it up in, you know, whether it's an octagon or the square.
Love it. All right. We're going to get into this rapid fire list of questions here coming in from our insiders. You could become an insider right now by texting 716-528-6727. It's a 2-week free trial. Perfect time right around the draft. We're going to have so many takes over the next week to really dive into leading up to the draft. And then obviously everybody that the Bills select will have a lot of coverage on the text line that won't ever appear on social media or in stories. So that's the best place to, you know, if you want specific analysis, if you want to ask us specific questions, that's the place to do it. And we're going to start with Brad Madden. Ryan, I'm going to give you this question to start us off. We'll go to John after that, and then I'll come back around as well. I always feel like Brandon Bean does something that is unexpected in the draft. That wasn't really on anybody's radar, something that's not really on anybody's radar. What's off the radar move do you think Bean could make that's unrelated to wide receiver?
You know, I guess it would just be not going wide receiver in round one, because that has been the talk for so long now. And you see Cooper DeJean in town, and he makes a ton of sense to me if he's on the board at 28, due to his position versatility, can play cornerback. The Bills have some question marks there in the near future, can play safety. I think a lot of us are not necessarily settled on the safety room right now either. So there's a lot of value there. Latu out of UCLA is one of my favorite edge rushers in this draft, but he had the neck fusion surgery a few years ago. But I guess for me, it would just be going with a defensive player where everyone is expecting it to be wide receiver.
John?
I agree. I think it would be if they went defense. And I think the only other I guess surprise, unexpected move is a trade back. It's all of this conversation, and we will get into it, I'm sure, as this show goes on, is how willing is Brandon Bean to push how far up to get a wide receiver is the strongest conversation most have. But what if he feels the opposite and thinks that the price is right, or the crop that is in the 28, late 20s, end of the first round is just as good as, and deep enough that he could acquire more, maybe mid day two picks, and have some extra second rounders and still get the same caliber wide receiver and address defensive end or interior or safety or even cornerback or whatever it may be, interior offensive line. I mean, this team, it doesn't have holes, I wouldn't say. I mean, it has holes, but they're not as striking as maybe some people think. But they definitely have a lot of positions that could really use some addressing, and maybe that would be the alternative that would really kind of shock us. And I'm not saying people would probably be happy with it, but it could be a way where it's all right. It was too steep a price to go up to get one guy, so let's move back, and maybe we can address the same positions, just maybe even twofold.
Ryan, we talked about, I'm going to throw a couple players at you and a couple of positions as well here in a second. Can you hear that in the background? I open up did you hear anything in the background?
I didn't know.
See, that's so interesting, because when I open up like a new tab on my computer, and if it starts playing a video, it blows my face off, but it never pops up on the screen here. It was just awkward because I was talking while it was happening. I'm going to throw two positions at you guys and two specific players. And we kind of talked about one of them, Ryan, at Wingnuts the other night. But I think, like, if we're thinking about what could potentially go completely off the radar, completely swerve, I'm thinking about potentially a tackle at 28, an offensive tackle. And I'm not sitting here advocating for it. I'm not even sitting here saying that that would necessarily be a pick. But I do think that if you're thinking about 25, 26, with the way that the Bills have started to reshuffle the deck in a lot of different position groups, that's one down the line where you're thinking, okay, how many times can you possibly be at 28 and have the kind of quality at that position like you're going to have in this year? Like, the tackle class goes super deep in the first round. There could be up to six, maybe even seven offensive tackles selected in the first 32 picks. So what I'm thinking is, if a guy that the Bills absolutely fell in love with, and I think of a guy like Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, who's a very raw player, you get him at 28, there's first round quality there, but maybe not ready to play right away. You don't have to move off of Spencer Brown. Like, I know we've talked about this before on the pod, Ryan, of maybe trading Spencer Brown to try to get more draft capital and moving in a rookie. I don't think you have to do that. I think you could draft Guyton, have him be your swing tackle, maybe move Lyle Collins inside. This is just one scenario that I wouldn't at first glance, I'd be like, wow, this is kind of off the wall. I don't know if I'd be into that with the wide receiver need being what it is. But if you can't get one of those top three guys, and if you're not over the moon about Brian Thomas in terms of getting up and trading assets for him, I think we could be looking at a potential best player available situation. And this is the first position. I'll leave it up to you guys to discuss.
Yeah. So let's start with tackle there. Jordan Morgan makes a lot of sense to me. Tackle out of Arizona, 30 visit with the Bills. Someone who has seen his stock rise quite a bit. The fact that the Bills brought him in for a visit tells you that there's some kind of interest there and potentially. And, you kind of already said it. Spencer Brown is entering the final year of his rookie deal. You're really happy with the way that he played last season. If you're Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, But he's also had some back injuries. He's had some surgeries. There were some durability concerns early in his career. So you do want to have a potential next man up. And maybe you feel like Ryan Vandermark has the versatility to flip over to right tackle at some point. I thought he looked a lot more natural at left tackle personally. But Jordan Morgan, in terms of the value, yes, that's a first-round talent where when you get past the four wide receivers, as you mentioned, I think the first three are clumped in their own tier. I think Brian Thomas Jr. is clumped in his own tier. And then you get to those next guys. Can any of those next guys develop into a true number one wide receiver? That's what the Bills have to determine if they're going to take one at pick number 28, if they stay put, that is. So there's going to be other positions, tackle, cornerback, safety, where there are guys there that are definitely first-round talents, probably higher up on the board. And we know that Brandon Bean does stay true to his board. He's not going to reach for a player just because it seems like it's the biggest position of need.
I think a few things here. I think in general, you're really going to get an early indication of how Brandon Bean is viewing the roster in 25 with certain players at certain positions if they do not go wide receiver in the first round. I think tackle would certainly be one. To me, I think, though, the tackle would have to be so much strikingly higher than the next one, two, three guys on his board for them to go that route. If those next one, two, three guys are wide receiver, interior defensive line, edge rusher, frankly, even a guard or a safety, I just feel like those are positions that could satisfy the now as well as the future far more clearly than it would be if you went with the tackle. Because if you're drafting a tackle, you're not keeping Spencer Brown. You're not paying him, even if it's a valuable contract there, because you're not using a first-round pick. It's not like the third-round pick where he goes and picks Dorian Williams and there is no path for him to play because you have an all-pro in Matt Milano and seemingly a great player in Terrell Bernard as your linebackers. Outside of injury, you just burned a third-round pick out of reserve. You can maybe get away with it in the third round. Even I still am critical of a decision like that. You can't get away with that in the first. So it would simply be we're drafting a guy that's a tackle and we're pushing Spencer Brown out. And that's just also a weird dynamic of sorts to have on your roster, I think, one that is in such transition as well. So I think tackle would have to be, again, some guy they'd have to have ranked, what, in the teens on their board. And then it gets to them in the late 20s and they're like, oh, wow, this guy is five, six, seven slots higher than our next guy. And even though those positions are of a greater need, we legitimately could not pass up on the tackle. That to me would be the only avenue that I think he would go that position that high.
So let me just push back a little bit just because I'm thinking this out and how it would be viewed if they did go tackle. Twofold. Number one, all they ever talk about is like competition, position competition. They don't want anybody to feel safe or like it's their job. And listen, I thought Spencer Brown had a like low key breakout season. Like, I don't think he was a all pro or a pro bowler, but where he was to what he did last year, I'll give him credit for a breakout season. But if you're the Bills, like, I don't think a pick even at this spot is one that you're making for necessarily 2024. I think it's protecting yourself if you lose Spencer Brown. And on the other end of the thing, and I know some people might push back and say, well, you'd have to trade Spencer Brown because if you're drafting like a Tyler Guyton, and I bring him up specifically. Now, his athletic score isn't as high, so maybe this isn't a great comp to Spencer Brown. But for like size-wise, 6'8", 34 and a 1/8 inch arms, 322 pounds. He's actually a little bit bigger, broader than Spencer Brown was coming out. A little bit more refined as a blocker, a little bit more known for his run blocking as well. So maybe not like a perfect fit, but I feel like it's that kind of situation where you're looking at this in free agency. And if Spencer Brown goes out and has another spectacular year and signs a massive free agent contract because of the size and because he has 2 years where he started a bunch of games, had a lot of production, now you're looking at a potentially a true comp pick on the other side of things. And I know we all saw what happened with Tremaine Edmonds, so maybe too soon on that conversation. But I just think that there's layers to this that I think you can at least think about. Now, I want to bring this up too. I want you both to respond to that. Scott Maranto, one of our regulars and one of our basketball buddies. Center Zach Frazier at number 28 would be off the radar. He's talking about interior offensive line. Another offensive lineman, center guard Graham Barton at 28, who has been a huge riser throughout the entire draft process. He can even play all five positions and go outside. I guess I'm asking too, like with all these different options on the line, what are Bills fans going to be thinking about Friday morning if they go out of the first round with an offensive lineman, tackle, guard, center, whatever?
I'll say this. Interior offensive line makes a lot of sense to me. And I've brought up with other people, Eric Wood was drafted as a guard, and then they right. kicked him in. And to me, while it's been reported and discussed that Connor McGovern is going to play center, remember Deion Dawkins made a very clear point at training camp before last season. He's never gone back-to-back seasons in his Bills career playing next to the same guy at left guard. And the Bills offensive line was pretty good last year. And I think mixing it up, if you don't have to, why do that? Or just add another piece to where, all right, between David Edwards, Connor McGovern, and this rookie, let's see which two of the three are the best fits. And then at the best spots. And then, you know, you still got the rookie in there that even if they don't get up to speed at the same pace as Osiris Torrance, which was extraordinary. I mean, that's about as best case scenario for a rookie offensive lineman as you're going to find. So I think it would be probably automatically unfair expectations for anyone on the offensive line to immediately be thrust into that. And people just automatically thinking, oh, well, Osiris Torrance just did it. But I think that would make a lot more sense because also you have two spots to deal with here. You could either put him in at center, you could either put him in at guard, and either way, there's room for them. Whereas at tackle, I just don't think that would be it. So interior offensive line, yeah, it's not really discussed a lot in the first round, but I absolutely would think it would be fine. And again, it's all about Josh. And yes, that's the sexy way to look at that is who he's throwing the ball to. But what if he doesn't have to run around like a chicken with his head off and play Superman because the offensive front is continuing year after year to be more of a protective element for him. And that also could help the running game, which I'm not saying run the ball more, but maybe if James Cook can get free until the point of attack, that could also spring things up. So Bills fans wouldn't like it, to get back to your original question. They wouldn't like it if it's not a wide receiver. Let's just be real. That's what it's going to be.
Right.
If it's not wide receiver, they're not going to be happy with it. But that doesn't mean it would be a bad pick if they win a variety of other routes.
Yeah, I would probably have to fire up a reactions article pretty quickly on Thursday night if the Bills do go with an interior lineman or even an offensive tackle. But a guy like, you know, Graham Barton, another player that Scott mentioned, makes a ton of sense because he can play center, he can play guard, he can play all over that line. He's, you know, like Ryan Bates in terms of what Bates could do for this team, although I think Barton has a much higher ceiling as a player. So one thing Brandon Bean has always done is build in the trenches on both offensive line, defensive line, his entire tenure here. You get someone in that can either take over that left guard spot and then give Deion Dawkins someone that for the next few years can be that player that can play alongside him, or you can keep McGovern there for year two and kick Barton inside to center, have that young core there of Barton and then Osiris Torrance side by side and potentially with Spencer Brown as well. And really put together a solid line for, to John's point, that allows Josh Allen to not have to run around, to not have to take off and run after a few seconds to scan the field. And eventually guys in this system will get open from what we've seen when Allen does have some time.
The other position I wanted to kind of zero in on was cornerback, because, you know, I kind of look back and maybe I was a little bit hasty in dunking on Mel Kiper a couple months ago when he had the Bills taking TJ Tampa. Part of that was just like, I had not seen anybody talking about this kid, and he goes out of left field, and the way he set it up was brutal. He's basically like, the Bills lost Poyer, they lost Micah Hyde, so they should draft a cornerback in the first round. So I just, it was weird. But the more I sat with the idea of cornerback, the more I'm like, okay, you go into draft season last year, into the college season last year, and Kool-Aid McKinstry was like everybody's top cornerback, like if you were doing like big boards, right? Like going into the college season, he obviously had some really tough matchups throughout the season. But what I like about those Alabama corners, him and Arnold, is that they're battle tested, right? Like when you play for Alabama, you're playing elite wide receivers week in and week out. You're playing in big time games in the playoffs, all that kind of stuff. So I like the idea to at least consider one of those guys. But I think, go back to what you said originally, Ryan, to me, Cooper DeJean is like the dream scenario. And I think it says a lot that the Bills brought him in to take an extra close look, kind of get them probably in their building, see if he kind of is able to kind of pick up all the different things that they want to do. Maybe have Bobby Babich spend a little bit more time. I mean, go back to 2017, 18, 19. I don't think there's a guy better positioned right now outside of Sean McDermott than Babich to figure out, all right, who do we really want to invest in? If we're going to invest a day one or day two pick in a potential safety, and who knows, maybe he'll be a cornerback. You know, we could figure that out on the other side. But in terms of a defensive back, I think Bobby Babich has a great baseline for what it's going to take. And I'm very intrigued by the fact that they've spent a lot of time with this guy.
And DeJean, to me, is what's really intriguing about this visit, because there's a lot of 30 visits where nothing ends up happening. They don't get drafted. DeJean only had enough time to make four top 30 visits between now and the draft. And the Bills were one of those four. If I'm DeJean and his agent, I'm only going to places where I really think this is a potential landing spot. And for the Bills to be one of those four, you know, teams, I believe it was them, the Eagles. I cannot remember the other two off the top of my head. But that tells you that I think there's mutual interest that DeJean is, you know, wants to potentially come to Buffalo and play in this defense. And for Buffalo, it makes a lot of sense at 28 if those top four receivers are off the board. And I think there could be more than those top four that are off the board by 28. If a run like that happens again, the Bills shouldn't just have to sit there and say, well, let's take this next guy. We don't have a first round grade on him. If a DeJean is there, you're going to run up to the podium for a guy like that, because the grade, the versatility, the need at cornerback, Rasul Douglas being 30, Christian Benford, as good as he's been, again, he's missed some time in his career here in Buffalo. You want to make sure that you have someone that you have long-term faith in. And, you know, as good as I think he can be at corner, I think DeJean is a perennial or a possible all-pro type safety. So you like what he brings to the table. You like that position versatility and how they could even use him as a rookie in year one.
I mean, you talk about a dream chess piece for Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich. I mean, there have been other Jeremy Chinn, Kyle Doug. I mean, we've heard other names in years past that Bills fans, when the cupboard was stocked offensively and at other positions more, they loved the idea of those types of players. And this would satisfy the, all right, maybe year one, you pair him with Taylor Rapp. And then year two, you see, do you want to sign Rasul Douglas to a medium, you know, 3-year deal extension, because he's been doing well? Are you in or out on Kyir Elam? How does that shake out? Or does he finally, after 3 years, develop into someone you can put onto the field as a first-round pick? Christian Benford, now he's been in that position. There have been some injuries that he's had to miss time. He's been solid. I think that would be a perfect scenario of a, this fills multiple holes. We just don't have to force it one way or the other. My only hesitation would be this. And I know Matt and I, we've discussed it on some of my previous shows, is with this draft, I would like to see Brandon Bean go more with, this is what this player is, and this is what we're going to ask them to do. I think some of his misses have come when it's, let's draft a press corner in Kyir Elam and try to force him into a zone scheme. Let's draft a bull power rusher at 285 in AJ Epinesa and ask him and turn him into a speed rusher and basically lose 2.5-3 seasons of his career. They tried to do some body work with Boogie Basham and change him a bit as well. That never worked out. You could even point to someone like Spencer Brown. It took being healthy and year three to get the best out of him as a guy who was, I believe, a tight end and was not even playing the position at North Dakota Northern Illinois, Iowa, excuse me. And it's like, just find a guy whose skill set you like that can fit with that skill set and what you're doing. And my only hesitation with going the DeJean route would be, if you want him to be a safety, let him be a safety. If you want him to be a corner, let him be a corner. the yo-yo stuff to me, especially for a young player trying to just simply acclimate and keep their head above water, is not always the best path and starting jumping off point for a young player.
And I think that's a valid talking point, because a lot of the guys that they have cross-trained or tried to cross-train were players at the bottom of the roster that you weren't sure they were going to make the roster.
Cam Lewis.
And I'm blanking on him now. He played at Notre Dame, and he went to the Bengals.
Nick McLeod.
Yeah. So these guys that they're trying at different spots, you know, it's one thing if they're a bottom of the roster, late round pick, UDFA. But you're right. If it's a first round pick, let him pick that, or let, you know, say, this is your position. This is where we're going to play you in 2024 and beyond.
And it's why I'm glad there was so much chatter of the should Christian Benford move to safety. I'm glad that they didn't. He's played well at corner. Why force him to a different type of position? And, oh, by the way, you still have Cam Lewis to fulfill that role. You don't need multiple guys to do that. And to your point, I think Cam is great at it. So there's no need to invest in a high draft pick and yo-yo them around, unless that is, you know, like a Kyle Hamilton is an incredible weapon that you can use in that capacity, unless you want to utilize them in that way.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I put out the call to our text insiders on the Shout text line for questions that we're firing through. We're spending a lot of time on this first one. I think it's a really, really good question and a fun conversation exercise to go through. If you want to become an insider, text 716-528-6727. 2-week free trial, $3.99 a month after that. The Shout text line is brought to you by Kerry C. Byer, attorney with the law offices of Francis M. Litra, located at 237 Main Street in Buffalo, New York. If you or someone you know is seriously injured, give them a call, 716-852-1234, or check out LitraLaw.com. Before we jump to the next conversation, I want to go back to, you brought up Kyer Elam, and you did Joe Biscaglia's podcast today. I'm hopping on with him next week on the Buffalo beat. He does a great job over on that show. But my man, we had a massive disagreement on the Super Pod that we did with you a couple months ago about Kyer Elam's trade value and if he has any. So I want to kind of spin that around the table here. Like, where do you feel like Kyer's trade value is at? Where do you see him fitting into this room? Because there's not a lot of depth at that position. I know they have a couple cornerbacks, including another Pittsburgh, Devonshire, I think his name is, a Pittsburgh cornerback that's been in and out of top 30. They're looking to add players. But I think Kyer Elam is actually in a really important role as the top corner off the bench behind Douglas and Benford, both guys who, over the course of their career, have had some issues with getting injured. So I think we'll start with those two questions. What is Kyer Elam's trade value? And could the Bills afford to lose him if they were to trade him away?
I think the trade value is probably somewhere on day three of the draft, maybe a fifth, sixth round pick right now, in my opinion. I don't see it being much higher than that. I know, former first round pick. There are teams, though, that are going to say, well, he'll fit our system a lot better. But I don't think they're going to go out and offer a high pick for a player that has struggled early in his career that knows that maybe he doesn't fit Buffalo's system. I think that they might just sit there and say, if Buffalo really wants to move on from this guy, they're probably going to take him for, pennies on the dollar. So I don't think that he has a high trade stock, but I do think you could still get something for him. Absolutely.
Joe brought up the idea when we were discussing it earlier of maybe Kyer being part of a package if the Bills chose to move up. And it would, again, probably not satisfy, oh, you don't have to give that Minnesota second round pick because you're giving Kyer Elam. I agree. The value, I think, overall is low because, yes, part of the conversation just generally over the past couple of years has been, oh, well, he makes some good moments in games, but he's still just not getting on the field. People confused a little bit there. I just don't think he's shown enough on tape. And I think people probably either talk and or trust the Bills and their coaching staff, especially Sean McDermott, and say, well, if Sean's not comfortable bringing him out there, then why are we going to give up something now as he enters year three to do that as well? So I don't think there's a whole lot of value to trade him. And I almost feel like that's why a year ago going out of camp, to me, that was the time, is if he's not going to make the team, they had good depth last year and he didn't show enough, but now he's basically sat on the bench for a year and a half at this point. And I just think the value isn't there. So you might as well, you're not paying him a ton. And I just figure, to your point, Matt, of who else is there next in line corner, which seemingly is always called upon for at least a few games over the recent years. I say you just keep them, and who knows, maybe they'll luck out. And I also just feel, for better or for worse, the Wyatt Teller trade is forever going to be in Brandon Bean's mind. And he's going to rather, I think, sit maybe a year or a season too long on a guy just to solidify the fact that he is or is not the one that they selected, rather than pull bait early. And most would probably argue that at this point it would not be early, but would rather pull bait a little late than pull it too early and have a guy like Kyer maybe go to a better fit systematically and thrive.
So there's a lot that goes into this, because you're right. Like, there's going to have to be a scheme fit, but this is a guy that was a first round caliber player, has sub 4.4 speed, ran a 4.39 at the combine. And I think that if you want to talk about like being competitive, like in big game situations, I think that he has actually put some pretty good stuff on tape. Has it been consistent? No. And, you know, we've well documented the struggles of Kyer Elam. But I also think that we're forgetting the fact that, like, you know, guys have gone for crazy hauls around draft time in the past. I mean, there's always like a trade where you're like, really, that guy got that much? I mean, this is a uber young player. I mean, he's what, 22, Ryan? We were just talking about
22. Yeah, he's still very young. He was very
super young, right? And so I think if you're like, I think he could yield as high as like a third round pick. And I think for a needy team, I look at a team like Indianapolis who needs a cornerback. They're going to probably have to draft one this year. Maybe you did some work on Elam. You liked him his draft year, whatever the scenario. I'm just baking something up, right? They come to you and they offer you 82 this year.
Well, you're draft. Doing it 100%. If you're getting a day two selection, he'd probably be at a loss for words, because he'd be so shocked that something like that would happen.
Make sure it's not a print call,
right? Is this Brandon? He'd be like, did Shane hire someone to bust my chops here and really get me going off my, put me on tilt on draft day? Yeah. I mean, that would be amazing. And I would just add this, and this is what bakes it to me of the Kyer Elam thing. We're there. Kyer's working his tail off all the time. So that's right. What I think confounds me of the, why is this not working? Because it's either he's not trying or he's not talented. Well, I definitely think he's talented, and I see him trying and putting in the extra work literally almost after every single practice. So that's where, even as we enter the third year of this conversation, I still don't have a good answer as to why it hasn't worked. But because of that, I still don't think you're yielding a day one or day two pick. If you asked a fourth for him, I think I would still run it on up there and do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I agree with that. I mean, fifth round is where I think is where you'd probably get that pick for Elam. And at that point, you have to weigh the pros and cons of it. You're hurting your own depth by trading him away. At that point, you're not getting a great return. And you're hoping that in this year that he's finally going to feel more comfortable in a zone coverage. And after all that work, that maybe it'll start paying off for him.
I wish I had like some like wrestling ring ropes that I can kind of shake right now, because we're going to the Ultimate Warrior. Let's go. There we go. Pump it up, baby. Pump it up. Wait, Ryan, did you do that on one of our shows at training camp?
I believe I did. Yes. Yeah. Shaking the ropes and, oh, yeah. Need the tassels on the arms.
What? This comes from the Ultimate Warrior on the text line. What is the different skill set between Adonai Mitchell, Brian Thomas Jr., and Xavier Leggett, and who would you take if all three were available? You know, Ryan, I think first and foremost, all three of these guys, super athletic, like guys that ran fast times that are going to give you some like that speed dynamic, all can play on the boundary, all have some versatility. I think that, you know, Brian Thomas is kind of like in a class of his own because I think he's a little bit cleaner of a route runner, and there's still a lot of room for him to grow in that area, which I think makes him even more intriguing. He's got a lot of deep ball, a lot of like touchdown production at LSU. You know, you got AD Mitchell who really only has this 1 year of high end production. And the knock on him is while he's speedy, while he has some really good games, the Alabama game is probably his premier game last season. You know, he takes plays off, maybe not as engaged in the blocking department, although Dane Brugler wrote that he did block a bit on tape. And then Leggett, if you're talking about production, the least amount of production.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much nailed it there. I think you want to look at different intangibles, though. Brian Thomas Jr. was the best against press. He did very well against press. That's something you want to look for, someone that doesn't get jammed up at the line. That's somewhere where Leggett kind of struggled a little bit. Leggett only has that 1 year of production. You probably want to see a little bit more of that. AD Mitchell, it's the intensity type of questions. It's the work ethic. There was a article today that talked about him having diabetes and some concerns there about controlling that. So there's things that you want to at least know about. Are you comfortable with him as a player? Can you coach him to not take plays off? The talent's there. He's a cradle catcher a little bit too, although he didn't drop a lot of passes in his career. He wasn't the most, sure-handed in terms of using his hands purely. Used his body to kind of bring the ball in a lot. So there's little things like that, but you're right. The athleticism for all three of these guys is off the charts. It's just, to me, Brian Thomas Jr. is kind of in his own tier away from these two. Thomas Jr.'s a little unpolished, but the upside, you see it, you see the flashes, 6'3", the speed, you can just kind of envision him on the outside in terms of how dangerous of a weapon he could be for this offense with Josh Allen.
Yeah, so if all three guys are on the board, John, who are you taking?
Brian Thomas. And I agree. I know Ryan said it earlier that it's like the three at the top that everyone knows about. And it seems most are in favor of putting Brian Thomas on a tier of his own. It's like, okay, he's the clear cut number four. And then it's almost a dealer's choice or just throw him in a bucket. And the margins between the Mitchell and Leggett and Polk and some of these other guys, you're even starting to see names in these mocks that are shooting up from what you thought was late second rounders to push in the first and all of this. And that's where, again, when you get to the trade conversation and what the Bills do and best player on the board is, it almost seems like it's 3-1 and then everyone kind of jumbles them all together. Yeah. And that's where do the Bills feel they have to get up to go get, because maybe, okay, we're not giving up next year's first, so the top three guys are out of the equation. Then it's what we think we can get Thomas. We'd have to mortgage maybe, you know, next year's second or whatever it may be. Or is it, okay, well, we don't even want to do that, but we like 10 of these other guys, and we think the margins are so slim that we'll just stick around here. That's the interesting part of it. I also, as we're discussing this, was trying to think back. We've done so many drafts, it's so many coverages, and you get so deep into it. I was trying to think of, like, what did I think of certain players that either did or did not then become what they are in the NFL? Did I think that this person was good? How did I talk about Justin Jefferson? Now, that year, obviously, we weren't talking about wide receivers, but how was I talking about Rashee Rice a year ago? There were some things about Rashee Rice where it's like, oh, he's not fast enough, or he was at SMU, and he did this, and this, and this, and it's like, look at Rashee Rice. He might be one of the best receivers from that class or things like that. So as we're going through this exercise of, all right, rank these three wide receivers and differentiate them, I was just kind of thinking back to in the past when we've done this exercise, how right or wrong have some of these more widely agreed upon evaluations been right or wrong? And it's I can't think of them immediately off the top of my head, but it's just a fun way to kind of also look at the next week and a half as people are really funneling in to say, this guy's good, this guy's not, and nitpicking, because we've been talking about this for 3 months at this point.
Right. And what's really funny is I was just watching a video with Matt Harmon, and he was talking about how, you know, 1 year after the draft, he's not sure any of those guys that went in the first round on that run are going to be true number one receivers for their respective teams. They're good players. Some of them are going to be really good number two receivers. So you might find yourselves in that same spot with the Bills this year at 28. Well, this is a really good player, but are they really ever going to develop into a number one receiver? Are you just trying to hope and project that a player is going to somehow do that because of the talent around him, the quarterback play, the scheme? It's just fascinating how quickly, like, some of these talks about some of the players have already changed just within 1 year of last year's draft.
Would it be bad though, if you got the number two before the number one? Maybe you don't know it at the time. You're hoping the guy that you picked is going to be your number one. But as long as if you stack the deck and the Dolphins, granted, they didn't draft them both, but let's say the Bengals, for instance, they drafted T. Higgins first. They hoped that he would maybe develop into a number one. He's a damn good number two. And then they get Ja'Marr Chase. What if the Bills, obviously everyone's looking like you lose Stephon Diggs, you got to get the one now. I don't think good players are good players. And if you're just restacking and rebuilding the wide receiver room, if they stay at 28 and they take Leggett or they take Adonai Mitchell and they're just really good number twos, I still don't think that long-term that's a bad pick for the Buffalo Bills.
No, definitely not. I agree with that.
Let me throw another thing in here. Like, is there room for a number one wide receiver in this offense at the target share that comes close to what Stephon Diggs was getting, knowing what I think we know about what the Bills want Dalton Kincaid to be?
I think that's maybe part of why they moved on from Stephon Diggs. They don't feel you have to throw the ball 150, 160 times to one player. Right. If they warrant it, yes. And Stephon Diggs, by and large, warranted that target share. Absolutely. But maybe in the evolution of the offense, which all offenses go through it, even with great quarterbacks, maybe instead of funneling 160 targets to one guy, if you distribute that more evenly to Curtis Samuel and James Cook and Dalton Kincaid and Khalil Shakir and whoever they draft, or two people, and Dawson Knox maybe gets a boost or whatever, maybe that actually makes them more potent because they're less predictable. That allows Joe Brady more flexibility in the way that he can call and personnel packages and things like that. I'm not saying the Kansas City Chiefs are easier to play against or tougher to play against now that it's not Tyreek Hill. You obviously still go through Travis Kelce. I mean, they just flooded it. And if you're right, you're right. You're wrong, you're wrong. They were wrong with Kadarius Toney, but it was fine to do that. They were wrong, it seems like, with Sky Moore, but they're probably right with Rashee Rice. Just keep doing it and distributing the targets organically how they need to go. That's the offense that they like to run. And I think if maybe you don't have an alpha, this is our number one, maybe Josh can play a little freer and just throw it truly to where it needs to go.
I think, Ryan, that's to me the argument for not trading up.
Right.
Like letting this thing play out and maybe even the argument for trading back, because I really think they need to accumulate enough ammo. I don't think that they have enough day three ammo to get up into round three on its own and then potentially get up in round two. Like they have a bunch of picks on day three, but I just don't know if the chart will allow them to do that. So if you don't want to go that route and you see guys like Tank Dell, Amon-Ra St. Brown, who've had the kind of impact on their teams that they've had, then they've been kind of like 1B receivers, but in a 1A role when they've had their like real success, I think you wait and you find the guy that's going to, whether it be, like John said, Leggett, McConkey, Pearsall, there's a bunch of guys out there. Javon Baker, I know a lot of people like him as well. Maybe you wait in that department and you go up and maybe get aggressive, you know, in the first round. If you really want to get aggressive, maybe you trade up to get DeGene or Latu, if that's the route you choose to go.
Yeah, and if the Bills were to trade up, I would say you need to go and you need to be aggressive to get one of those, you know, the Roma Dunze, which, again, I don't know if he falls out of the top 10. Because if you do go and get a guy like that, you say this is our number one of the future, and who cares if we give up a future one, because we're going to be picking in the late 20s all over again if everything goes right. That's the one thing I've always said about the Bills is if you're going to go for it, you need to go for it, because yes, you're going to get a good player at 28 more times than not, but you're not going to ever get an elite player at 28. Elite players don't generally fall into your laps at 28 in terms of those wide receivers, those skill set, those skill players. So if they're going to do it, they need to go in and go big. And if they're that high in Brian Thomas, I'm okay with that too. But if not, yes, stay put at 28. Yes, there's going to be a run on wide receivers. There might be a guy that you love there at 28. But if not, DeJean is a great consolation prize because he has a skill set to be a great defensive player. Latu, if you feel good about his neck, he's a guy that could emerge as a great pass rusher for a team where they've missed on a lot of guys in this draft. Or I don't want to say missed because I don't know. I don't think that's fair to Greg Rousseau, but he hasn't developed into the pass rusher that maybe they were expecting. It took AJ Epenesa a long time. They definitely whiffed on a Boogie Basham type of player. But if you can get Olatu at 23.5 sacks over the last 2 years, really good with his hands, really explosive type of player at 28, I don't think there's any fault in the Bills doing that.
And to piggyback off of Ryan's point about it's worth it to do the one if you're going to go up and get it, for everyone who says, oh, well, you can just stay put and look at Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tank Dell and Rashee Rice and all these people, right, those are not the rule. I mean, yes, there is talented players you get in the second and third. You could literally go through the test of time and say, oh, well, they found Russell Wilson in the third round, so why draft a quarterback in the first round and all of this. But the odds and history ultimately show you when you pick CeeDee Lamb in the teens, you're getting the best wide receiver in the draft as opposed to the guy that's below. When you're drafting Ja'Marr Chase in the top 10, he is better than everybody else. Yes, you can get Justin Jefferson at 22, and yes, you can get Antonio Brown in this round, and yes, Tom Brady was a sixth rounder. Those things happen, and you absolutely – there are guys that either – are late bloomers or blossom or some of their intangibles just didn't test the same. But by and large, it is the test of time that says the players that are drafted higher have the usually have less flaws that would make you think there's going to be variation and a poor transition from college to the pros. So if they go in and say, we need the number one, I don't want to mess around and roll the dice like they did with Diggs by when they acquired him and say, I know Roma Dunze is this. I know Malik Nabers is this. Give up the one. You're paying pennies on the dollar in terms of the actual price tag on your cap for a wide receiver of that caliber, and you're doing it for 5 years at the heart of Josh Allen's career. So if they, in their heart of hearts, truly believe that those three guys are instantaneous, all-pro caliber Pro Bowl guys, you do it. Because Josh Allen – will then be linked up in the prime of his career with a guy that this organization, scouting department, and as a whole believes is a can't miss wide receiver.
Well said. I want to get one more question in here before we get out of here. It's a fun one, a little bit different. Richard Perks, one of our favorite insiders, which away matchup are you looking most forward to, whether it be traveling, the rivalry, or the food scene? John, you've been to almost all the cities and you've been to Seattle, which is the one that
I have not.
Seattle. Oh, so okay.
That is my answer. It was, I think I only have four left. I have Vegas, San Francisco. Same. I've been to two games as a fan in Arizona, but never as covering them. And then Seattle. Those are the only ones I have left. Ironically enough, 2020 COVID, we would have hit San Francisco and Vegas and Arizona and it got canceled. Yeah. But no, I did not go to the Seattle game the last time around. So that's my pick for this year. Of Seattle's probably a place that, as cool of a city and good things I've heard about it, my wife and I would never say, let's go to vacation in Seattle. So that's right. Where one of these things is for the work trip that I am super stoked for. Yeah, on this year's schedule, at least.
Ryan, I know it's tough because we got to wait for the schedule to actually come out and kind of look at a lot of different factors, but usually travel to one or two games every season. Which ones do you kind of have like, oh, man, if it works out, I'd really love to get there?
The Rams, I want to check out SoFi Stadium. I haven't been able to check that out yet. In terms of the game itself, I would, you know, the Bills versus the Texans, the Stephon Diggs game, I would like it for that. I think the atmosphere would be electric there for that matchup. We were in Houston together a few years ago for that wild card game. Good food scene, good time in general. Great. I enjoyed the stadium a lot too, but for the game itself, that one is going to be a fun away game for Buffalo.
Dude, the food in Houston has it as a solid number two, and yeah, it would be number one if not for Seattle and the fact that I've never been there. I've heard the environment's great in the stadium, so I'm excited for that in Seattle. The scenes there, like the food, the, you know, obviously the birthplace of Starbucks. I'm a big Starbucks guy myself, so I'll probably hit a couple of the original spots, but I'm excited for that. Houston's amazing. Let's play a little different game. Our least favorite road trip. And for me, I'm glad you want to see SoFi Stadium. I've been there twice now. LA sucks. Okay. And that is my take. I don't like LA. I'm a West Coast guy. That's coming from a West Coast guy. Lived in Vegas for 5 years. I absolutely loved it. I love California. I love San Diego. I love Sacramento. I'm sure I'm going to love San Francisco eventually when I get there. Dude, LA stinks. Literally, it smells bad. And everything's hard in LA. Like getting around, getting to the airport, getting your rental car. Like, you know, or if you're Ubering, it takes forever. You get to your hotel, you're in a million people. I don't know. It's just, and that's coming from also somebody that loves New York City. I'm not an LA guy. And I took some heat for this take that I put out on social media last year.
I love LA.
Okay.
I love LA. I love it. I would prefer it not in September when there's a historical heat wave and it's 120 degrees and I'm wearing a 3-piece suit. That would be great for me. So I love LA. I'll say this. I'm not a fan of Baltimore. Sorry. Mm. Like my family grew up in the DC metro area, spent plenty of time in Baltimore. M&T Bank Stadium's nice and all, like that's fine, but Baltimore does not do it for me. Fells Point's fine, and I've had some good times, but Inner Harbor, no, I'm out. The crab cakes are fine, but no, like, I'm out.
I'll go with Detroit because we've been there a few times already, unless it's another Thanksgiving game, Matt Perino.
You have never seen, like, the City of Commerce or the Commerce Department of Detroit should hire Ryan Talbot to do its, like, yearly pamphlet. I've never seen a guy so jacked up to go to Detroit. And on Thanksgiving, of all things. Like, nothing's going to be open. It's going to be freezing cold. Like, terrible, terrible.
And then you have to walk, like, a mile from the parking garage to get to the stadium.
Anyway.
And they had a parade. Oh, my hotel was blocked in by their Thanksgiving Day parade, and I'm looking with all this TV gear of like, how the hell are we going to get to this game, lug in all of this stuff? It was chaos. My car was boxed in. I couldn't even take my car to park in the lot. But the one redeeming quality of Detroit, which is why it was not listed as my least favorite, Ford Field is in the running for one of my favorite stadiums in all of the league.
Oh, that's a great Lucas point. Oil. Yeah. We should bring that up.
Lucas Oil is in there too. So from an actual where we are at with the game and all of that, Detroit city-wise, probably at the bottom of the list. It's in there with Baltimore for me. But in terms of the stadium, Ford Field is awesome. And it was what, not to open a can of worms, it's what I wanted the Bills to do. But, hey, I digress.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean that's a tough time for Baltimore and Detroit because that's coming from a guy that grew up in around Cleveland. So –
at least we're not Detroit. Haven't you seen the video? Come on.
Yikes. Yeah, no, that's true. I like Cleveland. I just like giving you a hard time. John Scott, WGRZ sports director in the house, giving us an hour on a Wednesday night. Congratulations again, my friend. Ryan and I are still working on the next Wingnuts event. That is going to be sometime in May, either the first or second weekend. I think it might be the second weekend. So
yeah,
start thinking about that. Get that on your calendar. We'll obviously be cooking with a ton of shows next week as we lead up. We'll do our final mock draft. We might even have a couple guests on. We gotta reach out to our good buddy, Carl Jones in Rochester. He killed it last year. I think you did the mock last year too. So we'll do all that. Enjoy the rest of your week. We will be live with a short show tomorrow after we hear from Brandon, Sean, and Josh Allen. So we'll see you then. Thank you to John Scott. Have a great night, everybody.